uncensored, no holds barred talk. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. This is the Global Reality Radio Network.
Josh Reeves, thanks for being here with us tonight for another late night Moonbat edition of the broadcast. It is Friday, May the 4th, 2012, end to Saturday, May the 5th, 2012. Thanks for being with us here tonight, staying up late and on into the Moonbat hours of the night, morning, however you want to look at it. Got some interesting stories, to say the least, for you here tonight to talk about. On the show, don't have a, that I know of, I can go double check and look, but I don't think we have any emails. Don't. So, yeah, we'll be getting right in to our news stories here tonight, and we will also be starting a new series, a new series of reading here tonight as well. At request of one of our listeners, I had first read back in 2008, first book I ever read on air. I never really, it was not really something I ever thought to do. I'll tell you how that came about. I didn't have any influence for that, so to speak. You know what I mean? As in some things that you do, you know, you have, you know, somebody influence you to do that, or you saw somebody else do it, and so you did it in your own way. I had never heard anybody do anything like that, read those type of books on air and stuff. Back in 2008 when I did that. And I had, at that time, I was doing a four-hour show. I was just out of my goddamn mind. Because, I mean, 2 hours of that was commercials, you know what I mean? So now, without having all the commercials, I'm still doing the same amount of radio I was doing even back then. It took me a while to figure out that math. And when I finally did the math on that, I was like, whoa, goddamn. No wonder. You know, when you got commercials every 15 minutes, dude. You know, you got a four-hour show. If you got a two-hour show, you got even less. You know, you got maybe an hour. That's why sometimes, you know, people ask me to come on these shows, and it's like, oh, yeah, well, we'll be on for 30 minutes, you know, with two commercial breaks. I'm like, so I'm going to get 5 minutes or 10 minutes to talk? You know, when I go on shows like, you know, Red Ice and stuff like that, it's difficult to get out everything you want to get out in 2 hours. In fact, I don't feel like, well, I've done 4 hours total of interviews over the past year at Red Ice and still didn't feel like I got all the stuff that we could talk about. So hopefully maybe after the new album comes out, maybe they'll want to have, I mean, the new album, new movie comes out, we'll be able to be on there again. But, yeah, there's quite a few interesting things to talk about here tonight on the show. So thanks so much for being with us. Thanks to the new listeners out there. We always have new listeners coming in all the time. Thanks to, so we've been seeing quite a few of those coming in. So thanks to everybody. We're getting acquainted with how we do things around here. Kind of interesting. By the way, I just want to mention, we will have a new secure SSL encryption chat room That'll be coming on Monday. It's paid for it. It's done. But apparently, whatever company this is, I got this from. I mean, it was a pretty good deal, I guess. It was the best one I could find. So for what you get, but with a secure chat server and all that. It was just funny because I placed the order last night, and you had to answer to their invoice by noon. It's like they close at noon. It's like, oh, goddamn, what kind of hours you guys hold over there? Is that Moonbat hours or banker hours or what is that, you know? So it's not going to be done until Monday because their texts don't work after noon in the daytime. Just like, wow. That's kind of a wide window not to work. You know, that's not two or three, maybe, you know, even noon. Okay. So everybody will have logins. It'll all be secured, and I'll be adminning it. And it'll be keeping, because there won't be, fake names and people that are just sitting there not talking and stuff like that. It's not going to be tolerated. You're going to be banned, kicked out, booted instantly. So everybody's going to identify themselves, identify who they are, and it's going to be nice, and everybody's going to have a good time, and it's going to be encrypted, and we're not going to have to worry about anything anymore. So, and it's going to be like $30 a month. It'll be due on the 4th of every month. So if we just get people to pitch in on that, we'll be good to go. I'm sure we will. TheGlobalReality.com is my website. It's TheGlobalReality.com. That is my website. And up there, you'll find everything pertaining to my work, including links to the films I've made, the many films that I've made, also to the Cigarette Volume 2 DVDs and Blu-rays. Please, if you have still not received DVDs or Blu-rays that you've ordered, the Cigarette Volume 2, and I'm not talking about stuff you've ordered, like if you ordered a week ago or 2 weeks ago, but anything over 2 weeks, if you've ordered something and then got anything, please send me an email, globalrealityshow@gmail.com, and let me know so I can get caught up on those. I didn't realize this until recently. I started noticing something was weird because I got 3 or 4 emails from people saying they hadn't got their films yet. And what had happened when I was on assignment out there shooting stuff for the film, a big patch of my emails got deleted out of my email account. And PayPal was not sending me emails when I was getting transactions in that they should have, or they were going in my spam folder or something like that. I don't know. So I had a whole bunch of things that people were supposed to get, and there were receipts and stuff, and they got thrown out, and I didn't find those until I went into my actual PayPal account and saw those. So, just be patient. You'll be getting those very soon if you hadn't got them yet. But you can send me an email there. And if you haven't ordered them yet and you haven't got a copy yet, please do so. DVD or Blu-ray. We've got research packs as well you can get, where you get an additional disc that has extras and long extended cuts and stuff like that. It's like 4.2 gigs worth of additional material that you get. That's a data disc for your computer. All those different packages are up there at TheGlobalReality.com. And we also have the chip and banner there for the operating costs for the month and also for the final film budget for my newest documentary film, The Lost Secrets of Ancient America, Volume 1. And coincidentally enough, we've got several interesting news stories here tonight that tie into the research that we've done into this new film. And all you listeners, even people who've been listening even recently, will know that you guys have heard me on a day-to-day basis coming up here and talking about different aspects of stuff that I'm finding in this research for this film. And already a couple of times, we've seen even listeners in the chat rooms have pointed out some of these articles, and they said, "Hey, Josh, have you seen this? You know, this looks like they're allowing some information to come out now about, you know, whether it be some ancient structure that has frequencies in it or something, like what we found with Rockwall and the rest of that." If people point these things out to me, it looks like, oh, here's some damage control going on, you know, because of the stuff that you're working on. And I have seen that a couple of times myself, and a couple of more stories came out. And there are 2 or 3 stories here tonight we're going to get into that undoubtedly prove that they are, I think they really are getting shit scared about what I'm starting to dig up and find on this thing. Because it's absolutely true that there was a race here of people before what we know as Native Americans that gave the Native Americans culture. I mean, they tell us that the Native Americans were void of any, you know, they basically tell us that they were, ignoramuses, basically. They had no culture, had no anything, but yet simultaneously they turn around and tell us that they are also responsible for building all these mounds and all this, which actually wasn't true. They just utilized what was already there previously and been there and much older. And that is also found in the rock wall itself, which is why I'm I'm warranting this, you know, to get some funding to dig this thing up. And, excuse me. So, we're going to get into those news stories here for tonight as well. Going back to what I was talking about at the beginning of the show, I had, back in 2008 when I first started reading books on air, the first book I ever read on air was Vera Stanley Alder's The Finding of the Third Eye. And I did this because, honestly, I was trying to fill 4 hours of radio. And at that, certain times of the year, you know, specifically kind of sometimes in the fall, if it's an election year, I mean, there's all kinds of factors. If, you know, if the World Series is on, you know, what I mean, there's all kinds of different factors every part of the year that affect the news cycle, the information cycle, and everything else. And so at that point in time, there was probably some op going on oftentimes on shows when you'll hear me, what I'll do is if there's an operation going on, something we're trying to get everybody's undivided attention for, you know, some court case or something else where they're trying to get everybody and all the news is revolving around that, I tend to not talk about those things at all and try to find some deeper something else to get into because it always seems that those things are launched as massive distractions for much larger things. So whether or not I end up, what I end up getting to or not has any relevance to that, I always think it's important to, you know, because we're none of us, just because people are in alternative media or in media that's not mainstream does not mean that we are not victim to the same pitfalls as mainstream media has. You know what I mean? Because we can allow the news cycles to determine what we talk about by what they bring every day. And I think a lot of people in the truth movement, patriot movement, are very guilty of that, whether they mean to be or not. I think it's important to be selective about what you cover, but not just selective and picking, choosing things that are, you know, always the worst, most negative things. I sort of have a style for what I cover, so that's what I do. When I read that book, I didn't realize it was going to be such a success. I didn't realize that people were going to be so into it and about it. And I remember, I know there was at least 100 copies of that book that got sold on Amazon. I'm sure they had a field day. Whoever owns that the estate of Vera Stanley Alder owes me some cash, a donation, please, at my website, theglobalreality.com. I know for sure, because I remember there were at least 100 or 150 people that contacted me that said they told me that they did indeed buy the book. Almost everybody that, a lot of the hosts that were on Oracle at that time when I was over there bought copies of that book. Tons of people in the chat room, tons of people that sent me messages. So after that, it just kind of became a staple. It came, and I didn't do it for a while because there wasn't anything I was finding to read. And then one of our listeners, Nick, told me to read Gods of Eden, so I did that. And I've just been going on since then. So tonight, we're going to start our new series of reading. Another book by Vera Stanley Alder at request of one of our listeners, The Fifth Dimension by Vera Stanley Alder. So we'll start that tonight after we get through our news, which we're going to jump right into right now. So it seems that all of a sudden, there's a lot of attention being paid to finding out the truth about stories that coincidentally relate to the fact that, there were people here, you know, in the Americas, you know, South America, North America as well. But there were people here in the Americas long before Christopher Columbus, long even before the Native Americans and this Nordic race, the Phoenicians, I mean, you know, these red-haired giants, essentially. But there, I'm starting to see more and more stories come out about, oh, was it farther back in history than this? It's like they're slowly allowing a little bit of this stuff to trickle out so that, you know, I mean, because you're gonna really see a nice picture painted for you in my new film about just how wrong the timeline is that we've been told about history of the whole world. So it does seem that they're kind of playing a little damage control here. Did an English expedition beat Columbus to the Americas? Record of bank loan to sailor who found North America in 1497 hints that others may have been there first. Uh-oh. Although Christopher Columbus is widely credited as the discoverer of America, a new loan formed to the first sailor to find North America hints that other expeditions might have found the continent before 1492. The loan to John Cabot, discovered by historical detective work, makes the reference to the new land, hinting that sailors had discovered America before Cabot or Columbus. Christopher Columbus famously sailed to the Caribbean islands in 1492, but with a royal patent from Henry VII of England, John Cabot, a Venetian merchant, sailed from Bristol to North America in 1497. The new discovery shows that the first European to set foot in North America since the Viking Leif Erikson in the 11th century was financed by a loan of 50 nobles from the Bardi banking house. Just like Columbus, the English voyages were financed by the great Italian merchant banks of the era, receiving the loan in 1496. Again, the Italians. This is who financed all of these going to find the new land, going to find the new Atlantis. They didn't have the Rothschilds, the Red Shields, as their bankers quite yet, did they? And so there's two stories here. So there's this one, pushing it farther and back. And then, is this Walter Raleigh's lost colony drawn in invisible ink, cue to 400-year-old mystery discovered in map of North America? It is a mystery that has perplexed historians for more than 400 years, whatever became of the 120 settlers who tried to establish England's first colony on the northeast coast of America. Queen Elizabeth I and famed explorer Sir Walter Raleigh had hoped the expedition in the 1580s would create a capital in the New World, but something went terribly wrong. The men, women, and children simply vanished. So that, see, this is what's interesting to me here. You know, the first colony, these people just disappeared. They're saying, oh, they ran off, they were massacred by the Indians, or they blame the Indians, but is that what happened? You know, there's something more going on here. Did they find one of these ancient sites that was still activated and go through some sort of stargate or wormhole or something like that? The men, women, and children simply vanished, possibly massacred by Native American Indians. Any evidence of a settlement disappeared, and the infamous lost colony became rooted in American folklore. But solving the centuries-old mystery may have come a step closer this week after experts identified a tantalizing clue hidden in a map drawn by a man on the fateful voyage. Tests have found a hint at the possible location of what may have been intended as the colony's capital near Roanoke Island, apparently drawn in invisible ink. The X marks the spot is shown in the form of a lozenge, the symbol for a fort on the map drawn by John White, who accompanied Raleigh's first attempt to establish the colony and who led the settlers on their quest to set up the city of Raleigh. The ink, which is also disguised by a piece of paper glued to it, was likely put together using milk, citrus juice, or urine. Oh, that's random as hell. Well, I don't got no milk, and I ain't got no citrus juice either, so I guess I'm just going to pee on it. As was common at the time, its use during the Lost Colony Expedition also sheds light on an era of political suspicion at the time. Plotters were attempting to place Catholic Mary, Queen of Scots, on the throne, and there were concerns the map may be found by court spies. Now farmland, the site will be excavated It was expected to be announced today. Professor Brent Lane from the University of North Carolina and director of the First Colony Foundation, who made a request for tests to be carried on the map, said he delighted with the findings. So this is interesting. So they're going to try and find, you know, what exactly happened to these people. They just disappeared off the map. For what reason? I've been talking about, or last night I was talking about the with the rock wall and the and it's, well, just all kinds of temples all over the place. Any place where they've done rituals or occult stuff at, you always find resonant frequencies. Excuse me, resonant frequencies to be a big part of it. We talked about these Kabbalistic keys of creation, where, you know, once you learn these keys, and you got to understand this, you know, when you think of, when you talk about the Kabbalistic keys of the creation of matter, you know, we're not talking about Brittany and Madonna Kabbalism, Christian Kabbalism here, which is what that is. It's not the same thing. You got to understand that. What we start to learn is that these frequencies and the harmonic frequencies that we are capable of producing can actually change physical reality, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And again, that's one of the properties of many megalithic sites around the world, and it is absolutely present in the rock wall. Of course, you know, with the compounds of the rock wall being this geopolymer crystal, granite, that's buttered. Even the geologists who have looked at this, who believe it's, who even, you know, they'll tell you it's a natural formation, but when you go and actually read their dissertations on it, they make sure, and, you know, in big bold letters, they let you know that they believe it's a natural formation. But when you actually read through their hundreds of pages of dissertation on it, you find in there that they'll state plainly that the stones of the rock wall are interesting and unlike any other ones in the world because the stones are perfectly buttered, as if by a stonemason. And they've never seen another one like it anywhere on the planet because the stones are perfectly buttered. And what they're buttered with is even more interesting because under the analysis that was done, these stones are fused together, buttered together, by a geopolymer solution, which is two different types of crystals brought from two different locations and mixed together to make a crystal polymer that they fuse the bricks together with. And as I said last night, when they had set a mechanical machine, a digger, on top of the wall, it started to shake and, you know, vibrate. And they said that they thought it was going to, like, take off flying. It was shaking so much. The bulldozer was shaking so much that they thought it was going to, like, literally take off in the air. And that they could hear an auditory perception of the entire length of the 20-mile wall from its shaking and vibrations. And when they did these geomagnetic surveys on the wall, there was a geologist from Austin who did an analysis on it, and he got so shit scared about what he saw and what he found, his findings, he won't allow his findings to be published until after he's dead. But what he did allow to come out is that the two things that were interesting. One was that the wall has a piezoelectrical property to it, meaning it has, through the crystals and whatnot, it can create a piezoelectrical property and actually can produce a charge. And that also, while having absolutely zero radiation at all, no radiation at all detected anywhere in the wall, it has a magnetic signature that is a magnetic field that is 80 times stronger than the magnetic field of the Earth. Now, how's that possible, Watson? So all these things are going to be in my new film, and that's why we need your support to get it out. So if you want to help us out, we have a chipping bidder up there at the website, theglobalreality.com, for that. Stonehenge would have sounded like a cathedral to Neolithic man, say researchers. Here we go. Reverberating acoustics would have been a completely new experience to early settlers. Or would they? For Neolithic man, the effect of walking into Stonehenge would have been the audio equivalent of walking into a cathedral. This is the theory of a team of researchers from the University of Salford, who spent 4 years studying the history site's acoustic properties in a bid to crack the mystery of why it was built. The researchers found that the space reacted to acoustic activity in a way that would have been completely novel to people 5,000 years ago. Oh, yeah. No, they wouldn't have known about no acoustics back then. 5,000 years ago, they couldn't hear nothing. People didn't have ears back then. They just walked around and saw things. What are you talking about, you idiot? People 5,000 years ago would have had, it would have been a novel of what? How sound reacts in an acoustic way. Our ears are designed to pick up sound in an acoustic way so we can hear things directly behind us. I mean, it's a, you know, we're built like that. To try and say that people 5,000 years ago would not have had any understanding of depth perception of sound is just absolutely retarded. I'm sure some people will read this. Oh, yeah, they didn't know. They couldn't hear nothing back then. They didn't know what reverb was 5,000 years ago. They didn't know. Lead researcher Bruno Fazenda. What a fucking name is that? Bruno. As they walk inside, they would have perceived the sound environment around them had changed in some way. They would have been stricken by it, they would say, but that this is different. The researchers base their conclusions on the reverberation effects of the site. As sound is generated, it bounces back and grows as more sound waves join it. This is different to an echo, which is the report of one sound coming back to the listener. Modern cathedrals have reverberation times of 10 seconds or even longer, and concert halls have a time of between a 2 and 5 second delay time. A lecture hall has an optimal time of 1 second reverb, which is similar to Stonehenge levels. While this may not sound exciting to a modern reader, for Neolithic man living in straw and mud huts, the change... Here we go again. Well, it may not blow your hair back. 5,000 years ago, things were so derelict and retarded, that would have gave them a hard-on. I mean, every one of these, everything you read that's scientific says that. People in the past were retards. No, we're the retards. They're the ones that had it together. Because the site in Wiltshire is in a derelict state, researchers traveled to Maryhill in the U.S., where a full-size concrete reconstruction of Stonehenge was built in 1929 as a memorial to the soldiers of World War I. I didn't know about that. Where is that? Maryhill in the United States? Am I the only one never heard? I didn't know they built an exact replica of Stonehenge in the United States. Huh. First I've heard of that. They were able to make proper acoustic measurements that allowed an investigation into striking acoustic effects such as echoes, resonances, and whispering gallery effects. The second phase consisted in the creation of a full 3D audio rendition of the space using a system comprised of 64 audio channels and loudspeakers especially developed at the University of Salford based on wave field synthesis. The system enables an accurate and immersive recreation of what Stonehenge would have sounded like. Dr. Fazenda said, this type of research is important because we now can not only see ourselves surrounded by the stones using virtual reality, but we can also listen to how the stone structure would have enveloped people in a cosmic experience. Well, they're trying to, yeah, you know what they're trying to do here. They're trying to figure out what the frequencies are, man. How do you, they don't want to open some gate or some portal by going out in broad daylight and doing this, now do they? But if they can figure out how to get the frequencies correct, then reconstruct this thing, you know, with a building built around it, that would be different. So I see what's going on here. Yeah, they're trying to figure out. They're aware. They're just as aware of these frequency spectrums as we are becoming. And my hunch for quite some time, I think, is starting to come correct. They're on the hunt. That's what all this antiquity collection has been about. That's why every single country, you know, as soon as I find out and start researching about some ancient, you know, Babylonian or Anunnaki artifact in some country, inevitably next week on the TV, they'll say, that's where Al-Qaeda is. That's where we have to go. You know, as soon as I started finding out about the Behistun inscription in Iran, you know, here's, you know, oh, we'll go to Iran. And then I start hearing about, you know, the Ark of the Covenant possibly being in Yemen. And then, boom, you know, 2 weeks later, Obama's firing missiles at you know, children and shit like that. In fact, there was a guy there in, his name's Gary Vey, and he's been on Red Ice Radio before. Very interesting. He had been called over there to go to Yemen back right before 9/11. And they started decoding this ancient language, pre-Canaanite, pre-Aramaic, pre-Hebrew language that talked about, you know, the Ark being there in the tomb of Sheba, the palace of Sheba, and how only when a friendly nation was overhead could it be opened. And as soon as they start finding this language, boom, 9/11 happens. So he goes to get on a plane to come back to the United States, and as soon as he goes back to the United States right after 9/11, they tell him that he's wanted for questioning by Homeland Security because he was in the middle of a known Al-Qaeda camp. And he says, wait a minute, I wasn't in any Al-Qaeda camp. I was in a fucking archaeological dig that I got called here and invited to be at. And they said, nope, you're in an Al-Qaeda stronghold. A known, they use the terminology, a known Al-Qaeda stronghold. So he had to go to Vietnam where there's no extradition. They literally turned this site where the Ark of Covenant is speculated to be into an Al-Qaeda base. Or have declared it to be one. Even though, you know, there are witnesses and people who were there finding these groundbreaking discoveries right before 9/11 and then boom. Oh, now all of a sudden 9/11 happened and it's an Al-Qaeda camp. It was an archaeological site before where they were finding all this new stuff. Nope, now it's an Al-Qaeda camp. So, yeah, I think that's what's going on here with this Stonehenge. And they're trying to find the acoustical keys to the frequencies to open up these gates. This is very interesting. This makes me wonder what kind of op they're running with this. U.S. should return stolen land to Indian tribes, says United Nations. A United Nations investigator probing discrimination against Native Americans has called on the U.S. government to return some of the land stolen from Indian tribes as a step forward toward combating, continuing, and a systematic racial discrimination. Why? I mean, what are they going to do? They're going to give them more of their land back so they can open up more casinos. The government can come in and suck dry even more. I mean, this is just horseshit. There are sites here older than Native Americans in this country, and they're just bulldozing over them to build Walmarts and Sam's Clubs and everything else. There have been hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of mounds that have been bulldozed over, buried, all kinds of ancient sites throughout the United States. And that reason is, I've found, is because this knowledge of these people and what they had that far back, it throws salt all up in their timeline, dude. I've known that from day one about the rock wall, but didn't know all the ins and outs. I knew that for some reason they were trying to say that it was a natural formation when it's not, because whatever it is messes with their official timeline. You know what I mean? Their official timeline of events of how things have transpired on the planet. And I think that's why they're running this damage control with all these different articles now, you know, trying to further and slowly kind of push back. Well, maybe possibly there were people here, you know, a lot longer than we thought. You know, maybe we screwed up. And, you know, maybe they weren't devoid of culture and knowledge and anything. Maybe they actually did build things. And, you know, they're kind of they're slowly doing this because they know what's fucking coming. And what's coming is going to be the fucking hammer. We had that article last night about the gene tinkering. That was just a hoot and a holler, wasn't it? Listen to this. More right in that same vein that we had last night. We were just like, it was just pure and clean and clear that they were talking about somebody doing genetic manipulation. Well, listen to this. From Live Science, did a copying mistake build man's brain? Did a copying mistake? So somebody was doing some editing and they copied something wrong and voila, our brain was made. That sounds pretty clear like genetic manipulation to me. Listen to this. A copy editing error. How clinical that is. Like you're talking about, you know, your fucking homework or something. A copy editing error appears to be responsible for critical features of the human brain that distinguish us from our closest primate kin, new research finds. When tested out in mice, researchers found this error caused the rodent's brain cells to move into place faster and enabled more connections between brain cells. When any cell divides, it first copies its entire genome. During this process, it can make errors. The cell usually fixes errors in the DNA, but when they aren't fixed, they become permanent changes called mutations, which are sometimes hurtful and sometimes helpful, though usually innocuous. One type of error is duplication. When the DNA copying machinery accidentally copies a section of the genome twice, the second copy can be changed in future copies, gaining mutations or losing parts. The researchers scanned the human genome for these duplications and found that many of them seem to play a role in the developing brain. That's all pure accident. Yeah, all that. That's all purely accident. There are approximately 30 genes that were selectively duplicated in humans. Study researcher Frank Polonix of the Scripps Research Institute in La Jolla, California, said in a statement, "These are some of our most recent genomic innovations. An extra copy of a gene gives evolution something to work with. Like modeling clay, this gene isn't essential like the original copy, so changes can be made to it without damaging the resulting organism." The researchers studied one specific gene called SCARGAP2. There it is. See, this is what we were talking about last night, which they think has been duplicated at least twice during the course of human evolution, first about 3.5 million years ago, and then again about 2.5 million years ago. So, and that just continues to get on the same stuff we talked about last night. Mount Popocatépetl. Yes, Popocatépetl, the volcano down there in Mexico, right there in where the Temple of Quetzalcoatl is located at, where UFO sightings are numerous, where many locals many years ago witnessed Quetzalcoatl, the feathered serpent, flying on a Viermana spacecraft into the volcano, saying that he would one day return. And I've talked about this, but I just can't get over it. When you go look at what the signals, the signs of his return are, it's like, you know, the moon right where Venus is right now, this Venus thing we're going through, and this volcano erupting. Man, this is just this is going to be interesting, man. I'm looking for flying reptiles. I don't know about you. I'm waiting for it, man. I'm ready to see some shit. You know what I mean? I said it once. I'll say it again. Bring it on. I'm tired of y'all talking. I'm tired of hearing about, oh, this is coming, and that's coming, and let's bring it on. You know, oh, we're going to get world government. Oh, we're going to get asteroids. Oh, we're going to get false flag alien invasion. Oh, we're going to get martial law and civil war. Bring it on. Quit talking and start making action. Ready to see some shit now. North America's second tallest volcano recently rumbled to life, putting authorities on edge. Big eruptions of Mexico's massive Popocatépetl volcano are few and far between, as one geologist says, yet even without any dramatic fireworks, 17,800-foot Popo has the power to wreak havoc. Geologist Mike Sheridan, a professor emeritus at the University of Buffalo, said that Popo, and in fact many other volcanoes around the world harbor means of destruction that many people may not associate with volcanoes. Mud flows. And they don't even require an eruption, so they are less predictable. Popocatépetl lies about 40 miles southeast of Mexico City. The mountain reawakened in December 1994 after 5 decades of silence. Yet in the nearly 20 years since then, the volcano has rarely exhibited the kind of vigorous activity that began the week of April 12th. Since I said, it's been dormant since 1994. And all of a sudden, April 12th, right when Venus started showing up real bright, another sign of Quetzalcoatl here. What do we see? It starts erupting. This is interesting. Minor earthquakes have rocked the mountain. It has spewed out plumes of gas and ash, and multiple explosions have shot glowing rocks from the summit. The mountain has the potential to erupt magnificently once every 2,000 or 3,000 years. It has big eruptions, but they are so few and far between, but they have been pretty big, so that is the scary part. Mud flows, also called debris flows, occur when water suddenly mixes with volcanic ash near a volcano's summit. The water can come from a multitude of sources, an explosive eruption that melts a mountaintop glacier, a sudden deluge of rain with equally devastating results. This thing pops. It's not going to be good. But I still want to see that damn feathered serpent fly out of the middle of it. Oh, man, I can't wait for that. Flying Vermana aliens. I don't care if it's holograms or not. I want to see that shit anyway, you know? I'll suspend disbelief for a minute. Bring it on. Let me see what else we got here. What's the obsession all of a sudden with, like we talked about last night, you know, Jupiter's moons or Saturn's moons or whoever's moons or Mars? Why is all of a sudden after years and years and years, I mean, I don't know where you went to school at. Maybe, you know, your education was better or worse than mine. But, I mean, didn't we all grow up being told that our planets were just like inert, worthless balls of gas with absolutely no value or no real interest to us at all? I mean, that's pretty much what they've told us our whole lives. Oh, yeah, that's just a big ball of gas, unlivable for humans. It seems like that's all I ever heard my whole life about planets. Yeah, it's a big inert planet of gas, worthless. It seems that all of a sudden these worthless planets seem to be not so worthless. And it seems that a big chunk of the budget spending, you're seeing a shift in the budget spending away from, you know, space missions that happen just around our Earth to space missions which are happening on our planets. Destination Jupiter, European Space Agency switches attention to gas giants' mysterious icy moons in bid to find new life. Find new life, my ass. Find new resources to bring back to the Earth tax-free. For years, scientists and even David Bowie has been asking if there's life on Mars. But the European Space Agency has moved its attention away from the red planet to the icy moons of Jupiter. That's according to its latest announcement, which confirms their focus will now be on the gas giant's moons as part of Europe's next large science mission. The Jupiter's Icy Moons Explorer, or JUICE as it is often referred to, was selected over the two other candidates, NGO, the New Gravitational Wave Observatory, to hunt for gravitational waves, and Athena, oh, nice name, the Advanced Telescope for High Energy Astrophysics. Now, let's go back there a minute. They want to hunt for gravitational waves. And this is interesting. Correlation to what we were talking about last night. We're talking about gravity. and how they, you know, they really don't actually have a thing for gravity, an explanation for what gravity is. It's really a theory. But they're going there to look for gravitational waves. So it's almost as if they believe, and I don't think this is an official belief. It could be. I really don't know for sure, but I don't believe this is. But they could be saying that they believe that gravity is somehow a you know, a pretext for there being life. Meaning, if they maybe possibly in cases where they don't find, you know, a someplace that has gravity, there isn't life in there, and vice versa. When they find a place that does have life, it does have gravity. But I find it interesting that, that's what one of these spacecraft would specifically be looking for, especially in coordination with looking for specifically for life. JUICE is the first large-class mission chosen as part of the ESA's Cosmic Vision 2015 to 2025 program and will be launched in 2022 from Europe's spaceport in Kourou, French Guiana. The mission will be carried out on in Ariane 5, arriving at Jupiter in 2030 to spend at least 3 years making detailed observations. Jupiter's diverse Gallian moons, volcanic to icy Europa, and rock ice Ganymede and Callisto make the Jovian system a miniature solar system in its own right. And with Europa, Ganymede, and Callisto all thought to host internal oceans, the mission will study the moons as potential habitats for life. Or maybe they're going to do like they did in fucking, you know, 2010. Maybe they're going to turn that motherfucker into a second sun. The Lucifer Project, that thing. Our sun starts burning out of fuel prematurely and they go turn Jupiter into a second sun. Would not surprise me in the least. Is that a police car or a Christmas tree in the sky? Strange UFO flashes multicolored lights above the skies of Lithuania. At first glance, it looks just like a star. Then the camera pans in, and it appears that we are looking at a police siren, except it is miles up in the sky. The UFO filmed on Tuesday in Blaystock, Lithuania, hovers above the cameraman for several minutes. He's shaking his hands, does not disguise the fact that this is a weird object in the sky. It spins and flashes in different colors and remains motionless for 4 minutes. The uploader, who placed the video online under the name Robertas120-1234, simply added this plea to YouTube. Who will explain this, please? As we turn more and more cameras to the heavens, more and more sightings are cropping up. Sorry, I had to pause for a second to drop that in the chat room. The picture below showing a weird artificial-looking object on an image of the sun was released by NASA's Sun-Watching Solar and Heliospheric Observatory, known as SOHO. More SOHO stuff. Well, yeah. Oh, they're getting into that. Here we go. Oh, they're getting into the... back into the stuff I covered in that Secrets of the Sun thing, the Klingon Bird of Prey there. So they're ramping it up, man, whether people are seeing real objects, you know, real honest-to-God UFOs, or whether they're seeing, you know, government black op craft or holograms, who knows what. Regardless of that, regardless of what origin it is, there are definitely a lot of sightings going on right now, and I think it's going to continue to be more and more interesting, especially with these, you know, Mount Popocatépetl and the whole Quetzalcoatl thing. It makes it even more interesting. Hundreds of Alaska Airlines flight attendants say their new uniforms are making them ill. The attendants have complained that the outfits, which may be contaminated with a toxic chemical, have caused itching, hair loss, and other unpleasant reactions. They're probably made by Monsanto. Probably fucking, you know, the Agent Orange collection now at Target. You know? That's probably what it is. Christ, you got fucking... You know, I've noticed, you know, it's interesting, I've broken out before from, I've noticed that black fabric, not black shirts and stuff, but like black jeans or black work pants will, man, it'll make me break out sometimes. It's weird. And I think it's just, you know, probably these fucking cheap Chinese dyes they're putting at this shit we buy at fucking, you know, Walmart and Target and everything. You know. I buy my clothes at fucking the China distributor like everybody else does. So this is interesting, but I bet you a dollar to donuts this shit's being made in China with toxic chemicals and, you know, in the sake of the almighty dollar, they ship it back over here. But I wonder if this is going to fuel the racists even more. Babies develop racist traits age 9 months before coming into contact with other races. What? How does that make even make any goddamn sense? Somebody's lying. Come on now. White babies aged just 9 months show signs of racial bias. So white babies now show racial bias while they're still in the womb. Really? Really? Come on now. Y'all pulling my leg, right? Come on. Really? Oh, come on. Really? White babies now can tell. Oh, come on. Oh, man. That was going to choke me up. I was not expecting that. Researchers at the University of Massachusetts in Amherst found that by the young age, the babies were already discriminating against those of different races in their ability to recognize faces and emotional expression. So this could go both ways. Either, I'm a goddamn racist because I was born that way. I can't help it. I can't help it. I was already didn't like black folks when I was in the womb. I was born that way. Can't help it. I'm like Lady Gaga. And then you'll have this group over here. Smash the white babies' wombs before they're born. Kill them all. Split into a group of five-month-olds and other babies aged 9 months, they were tasked with the differentiating between faces of their people within their own race. Why do they have to say of their people? Faces of their people within their own... Who writes this garbage? And then one of those belonged to another unfamiliar race. Babies from the five-month-old group were far more adept at distinguishing faces from different races, while the nine-month-olds were able to tell apart two faces within their own race with greater ease. In a second experiment, the baby's brain activity was detected using sensors. Well, that's vague. They were shown images of faces of Caucasian or African-American races expressing emotions, then either matched or did not match sounds they heard, such as laughing or crying. Brain activity measurements showed that nine-month-olds processed emotional expressions among Caucasian faces differently than those of African-American faces. No, wait. This whole thing's bullshit for one reason and one reason alone. It's a fact. It's always been a fact. When you have a newborn baby, when a baby is newborn, folks, that child cannot even see. You can't see yet. Your vision has not focused in and came. You can't see, or even a child cannot focus his vision and cannot see when they are newborn. They're talking about 9 months in the womb, whether or not with special electrons they shove in the vagina, they can tell whether or not this kid can see. It's a fact. Everybody knows it's a fact. A newborn baby cannot see when it first comes out of the vagina. It's blind and it's got vagina juice, you know, still getting adjusted to the light, and it's used to being inside there, and, you know. I mean, so this whole thing is bunk. No, it's all true. We can absolutely tell that White people don't like black people in the womb. They can tell without even having to see them that they're black and they don't like them. They are genetically predisposed to not like black people. I mean, that's just unfucking believable crap. Race baiting garbage. I had talked about in the new Reality Evolution film, Part 5, The Secrets of the Sun, the Orion Belt, and how the mounds out in Moundsville, Alabama, where I shot for the film, were aligned to the Orion Nebula. And, you know, they spent 500 years building these mounds, and after they get them built, everybody disappears overnight. And they were aligned to the Orion system, and inside of the Orion system is this giant star creation center where these gases and dust balls just spit out stars constantly. Spectacular photo reveals bright nebula near Orion's belt. Bright beads of cosmic dust highlight a shimmering nebula in a new photo of a region just north of the famous Orion's belt in the constellation Orion. The Messier 78 Nebula, which is also known as NGC 2068, is often called the Reflection Nebula because its dust particles reflect the starlight that falls on them. These pockets of dust typically hide more interesting cosmic objects, but the new photo of Messier 78 and its surroundings demonstrates the beauty of dust particles in space. And, yeah, it is. It's very scenic. Say the least. Dense clouds of gas and dust are important to astronomers because they are birthplaces of new stars. The new image was made from observations by the Atacama Pathfinder Experiment Telescope, which is located in the Atacama Desert in northern Chile. The telescope detects the heat glow of interstellar dust grains, which enable astronomers to see where new stars are being formed. Messier 78 is located in the center of the image. When seen in visible light, the reflected pale blue glows of starlight shines against the dust clouds. So it's lighting up intensely right now as we enter into these different celestial events and celestial alignments. Very interesting stuff there. More proof of genetic manipulation coming out. They may come out with this yet. You know what I mean? They may come out with this with all this Anunnaki genetic manipulation stuff yet and make a new one world religion out of it. You never know. Residents of the Solomon Islands of the Pacific have had some of the darkest skin seen outside of Africa. They also have the highest occurrence of blonde hair seen in any population outside of Europe. Now, remember, blonde hair is always, according to the ancient Sumerian text, blonde hair is always a sign of a descendant of Enki. So that means Enki was flying around in his ship somewhere near the Solomon Islands, which is near Papua New Guinea, and just pouring, you know, fucking pitchers full of semen into wombs, you know, way out in the islands in Papua New Guinea. Because it's absolutely a fact. And even there was a science article that came out a year or so ago saying that all blonde haired people trace back to one ancestor from the Middle East 5,000 years ago. You know what I mean? A single mutation is responsible for almost half of the variation in Solomon Islanders' hair color. And they thought it was from the sunlight or anything else. But a genome-wide analysis turned up a shockingly clear result. Rare in the world of genetics, where a single trait can be influenced by a dozen or more genes. A gene called TYRP1, which resides on the 9th chromosome of humans' 23 pair of chromosomes, explained 46.4% of the variation in the islanders' hair color. A mutation in this gene affects an enzyme known to be involved in human pigmentation. The mutation doesn't appear in European genomes. An analysis of genomes from 52 human populations around the world revealed. Rather, it seems to have arisen independently and persisted in the Melanesian population. That makes the gene different from the one responsible for blue eyes, which arose from a single common ancestor between 6,000 and 10,000 years ago. See, they're saying this one's different. Before then, there were no blue eyes, they said. Yeah, that's the inky seed right there, the one they're talking about. The find solves a nifty genetic mystery, but it also highlights the dangers of assuming that genome findings from one population will translate to another. Yeah, because these guys were going around just pouring the fucking sperm. I mean, any open leg they could find, pour. I hear you. Teenage mother intentionally burned her 15-month-old son's genitals with a hair straightening iron. Jody Rock, 19 years old, from Tahlequah, Oklahoma. My goodness, I was there last year. I played in Tahlequah, Oklahoma. What a fucking shithole. God damn. And yeah, all the bitches I saw were ugly just like this one is. Ugh. Well, you burned a toddler, a 15-month-old son's toddlers with a straightening iron? I mean, I get pretty down and filthy on this show, and I'm not even going to say what somebody ought to do to you. I guess, I don't know. Well, some, whew. Yeah, that place sucked. Fucking Okies, man. Nothing against you from Oklahoma, but I just got to say it. Fucking Okies. There, I said it. I'm done. A brilliant nuclear scientist working at CERN Nuclear Laboratory was today sentenced to five years in prison for plotting attacks on behalf of Al-Qaeda. So this guy who we've said from the very beginning, it seemed that they set this guy up, tried to claim him as being a part of Al-Qaeda, when actually he was apparently coming into some research or finding some findings he was going to go public with. They didn't want him to go public with, and so they set him up and called him Al-Qaeda. Now he's going to do 5 years in prison to think about not opening his mouth anymore. I think we just about got through all the news tonight. I think we have. All right. Well, good timing then. TheGlobalReality.com is my website. That's TheGlobalReality.com. And we have a chip and banner there. You can support our work. We hadn't got a lot in this week. We just had to pay for a new chat room for you guys. So any little bit helps. You can help us out. TheGlobalReality.com. Please do so. We are going to take a break, come back, and start our new series of reading for you here tonight from Vera Stanley Alder's The Fifth Dimension. And, boy, I can't wait to get into this. Thanks to the person that suggested that I read that, because, I think it's a great suggestion, and I think it's going to be an interesting book, so we'll take a break, come back, and get into it. Stay with us.
Never thought about tomorrow. Seemed like a long time to come. How could I be so blind, baby? Slip on from me, honey. I let you walk on by. I refuse the love you had for me. I refuse the love and let it die. I must have got lost. I must have got lost.
just can't understand it. I just can't understand it. I just don't understand it. And I must have got lost. I must have got lost. I must have got lost somewhere down the line. I must have got lost. I must have got lost to give away them days you were mine. I must have got lost. I must have got lost. I must have got lost somewhere down the line. I must have got lost. I must have got lost to give away the days.
As we arise from out of the primordial waters of chaos, as Amun-Ra, the sun god, emerged from the lotus flower, I invoke the ancient Egyptian deity Shu, while inheriting the vibrational force of Tefnut in the hermetic form of Gid. We manifest as the nine and ad, embrace the face of the space and behold a mystic triad of Ad-Turi. Three of us initiated from the majestic temple of Karnak, where the opening of the mouth ceremony is performed. Where the uraeus, the crown of the sacred cobras, will be placed upon my forehead. In the valley of the kings, I walk as Inhotep, descendant of Ramses the second. I cast the incantation, the curse of King Tut, and watch the scattered beetles eat away at your flesh. So witness the splendor of Luxor as I summon the Nitiru Zuzor, while performing the great oracle of Tahuti. I call forth Rahuru, Kahuti, in the field of offering, where we drank from the blood of deceased pharaohs. Within the center face of the great pyramids of Giza, I possess the spirit of my ancient ancestors. Osiris, through the perception of my iris, I perceive Horus as the apparition of Isis. My soul wasn't placed inside a solid gold sarcophagus, and then imprinted upon my chest was the arm, the key to the afterlife, where my soul will seek eternal life.
For over 2,000 years, ancient Egyptians believed that their dead set sail on a sacred journey to a wondrous afterlife.
Learn hieroglyphics, not just pictures, but a celestial linguistic not related to a specific terrestrial distance. Ancient Egyptian civilization came from Mars, all people equal to that of Elijah, to guide you from the wilderness, to make the pilgrimage to the mountain of Sinai, where the spying eye watches as the prophets speak Nawapic in the temple of Amun-Ra. Nine astronomers graph the formula for the Southern Cross. Thor rise from the dark side with our laws. Orchis provide the planet with organic life, holding a skull of bee bliss in the background was Egypt's sun eclipse. Poltergeist close to Christ, was solid with pilot question me. Deep on the left of me, dagger through my chest place, but I escaped. Dressed like a gardener in an upper room, 10 peasants, 2 not present. Mary Magdalene, sprinkle it all on my abdomen. Fill my wounds, empty tomb, presume I was on abyss. Drop your fishing rod, bait the weak who hate to speak of love. Came to my own, but they received me not when my CD drop became. Even with the Sanhedrin baptized in the Jordan, recording John's last sermon, his accent was sort of German. Told the slave driver the table's turning on a grave robber. Hey Nicodemus, drop your idolatry and follow me. Drop your net, catch the catfish while he backflip. Don't hold him captive, drop him. When the tide changed, dead I was rendered. I have not ascended yet, I returned to Jerusalem, walking with Methuselah. The arrival of Shiloh, passing up the scepter, healing up the lepers. I came to the lost sheep to toss beats for them the right tool. Primitive but not limited to 16 balls in a sun cycle. Michael transformed to Yannon from the lagoon in the galaxy phrase Ilyun. Soon as June 26th, the mummy knits a new grave, a paved in jade, a curse for those who impose.
Ancient Egyptian religion warns all who dare defile the tomb of mighty Pharaoh. He who shall injure my tomb, the sun god shall punish him.
Through the iris of Osiris, I walk amongst the fires, relentless, to the ancient land of Memphis.
carrying the sacred capstone on 40 arms. I'm greeted by a group of master masons, silk adorned, who wore the charms of Horus, the Avenger. I said, I am a messenger from Netaru. Are you prepared for what I bear to you? They jested to the east, the shackles were released. I heard the moans of the beast. It was then that the granite was implanted with the positive chi energy. The slope became slanted on the angle equal to the distance that the sun's light must travel, unraveling the linens of nine kings and nine immaculate women. Hence the beginning of the obelisk, raising ritual, science of tachyon force, habitual but lost when the last piece of brick was tossed. The first Roman script embossed on the column base, the first emperor defiled and defaced the sarcophagus face. They couldn't imitate, so they had to replace benevolent Egyptian magic with a malevolent race.
With the heavens.
From strength, learn gentleness. Through gentleness, strength will prevail. What do you see beyond your fist? Awaken!
Uncensored, no holds barred talk. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. This is the Global Reality Radio Network.
All right, back here with you on the Global Reality right here on the Global Reality Radio Network. I'm your host, Josh Reeves. Thanks for being with us here tonight for another late-night Moonbat edition of the broadcast. We're going to be starting our new series of reading tonight, The Fifth Dimension by Vera Stanley Alder. We'll be getting into that here for you in just a minute. TheGlobalReality.com is my website. That's TheGlobalReality.com. And you'll notice if you're a new listener, that when you come to my website, you don't get hit with banner ads and you're not being sold to. Nobody's trying to sell you or close you the second you walk through the door. And I understand, too, I'm not trying to get you to think the way I do either. I'm simply trying to get you to look at things that you know, need to have some attention drawn to them. Come to your own conclusions. But you know, we don't try to sell you anything here. We don't have commercials, and I won't have commercials. I'm not above having sponsors if somebody comes along and has a good product. Not above that, but we rely strictly on our audience here to live and survive and to keep doing this work and to, you know, spending thousands of dollars on movies to put them out for free, it's just crazy, but it only happens because of you guys. So there's lots of ways to support our work if you haven't yet at my website. There's a May 2012 operating costs chip in. There's a film budget, too, our final film budget. There's a one-time donation budget where you can put any amount up to $10,000 in one day there. There's a monthly subscription where you can become a member, $20 level, $50 level on up, and it'll come out of your account monthly. You won't have to come back and use the chip-in banner. And there's also a P.O. box there. If you absolutely can't use online payments, you can send a check or money order there. And we also have an Amazon wish list there that contains some items, cameras and stuff like that, that we could really sure use for the operation. I've got one older camera, and got one newer one I got last year, a little small Sony. Man, I really could use some new gear, studio gear, camera gear, just better gear. I mean, because I'm right on the edge of being able to get this stuff looking so good. But, you know, having a nice, big, professional level camera, you know, like Jonesy has 100 of, you know, I don't even have one of, especially with the Mac and stuff now, would be totally, totally helpful. So I put a few things on there, and that's nobody's bought anything off there yet. But the reason I put that there is just because sometimes, you know, people want to make a donation when we need a piece of equipment or something, but, you know, they don't want to make a cash donation. You can just go there and buy it. You don't even have to have my information or anything. You just go in there and pay for it, and they'll ship it right to me. So, right below that, we have Facebook. You can like us on Facebook. We have been getting a lot of likes on there. Somebody else had started that for us, and I recently got admin privilege on there, so I've been posting some videos and stuff. We're over like 600 likes. Whoever gets the 666 like, I'll send you a fucking, you know, bloody cowhead or something. I don't know. We'll give a prize. Who knows what? All right. The Fifth Dimension. Vera Stanley Alder. Starting with a preface. There are many today who are trying to look at the world with clear eyes. To them, it seems as if civilization is at the crossroads, or even that it has become trapped in a blind alley. There seems to be a complete congestion between the forces of tyranny and those who are minded for liberty and peace. Although the existence of these dual streams is obvious, they yet seem so mixed and crisscrossed that they can only create chaos. Perhaps the age-long practice of compromise has produced a tapestry of civilization in which the good and bad threads are so inextricably interwoven that it would be hopeless to try and clarify them and introduce order and integrity into the pattern. Today, men are spending most of their substance on material for mutual slaughter in such a way they are the first 2,000 years of the Christian era drawing to a close. The world presents a panorama in which progress and barbarism, organization and chaos, brilliance and stupidity are accepted with a kind of conditioned blindness, a lack of values which renders non-existent the will of the people. Humanity seems sunk to the neck in a quagmire of muddle through energetic ineffectiveness. Energy is spent on producing marvelous inventions, and ineffectiveness is the result of the way in which these inventions are used. That's very true still today. I think this book was written probably in the, who knows, 30s or 40s, I don't know. What has gone wrong? Is there true cause for hope or despair? Is it possible to read the riddle of human evolution, to discover the clue to future progress, and to find the means by which humanity can be set free from the present apparent deadlock? For civilization has reached an impasse involving economics, health, morality, and self-knowledge. Is there any way of piercing the fog of surface happenings and understanding the real trend and significance of events? In my first two books, we studied life as presented to us by the great minds of all times, including the present epoch. We outlined the worldwide science by means of which the greatest discoverers and prophets in history have acquired their wisdom and knowledge. The science of meditation in Egypt, in Babylon, in China, in Tibet, in India. In every great culture, we find meditation producing the basis of morality and law. Whether through the oracle, the guru, the high priest, a Buddha, a Pythagoras, and finally a Christ. All taught that human beings contain a channel within themselves which, when developed, connects them directly with the universal mind, the universal love, and the universal purpose. The Buddha fasted under the Bodh tree until his meditation opened his channel to nirvana. Christ fasted 40 days in the desert until his meditation inspired him to his task. He said, only by prayer and fasting shall ye come unto me. Pythagoras of the Greek Golden Age would not accept pupils until they had kept silence for a definite number of years. But alas, after that, the age of barbarism set in, and these wonderful teachings were forgotten. It seems very strange, surely, that now, when there is talk of the coming of a new age of enlightenment, the worldwide violence and disruption everywhere is coupled with a new interest in meditation amongst the people themselves, amongst the new young arrivals of this generation around the globe. For some time now, there seems to have been an instinctive recognition that a new and better world civilization can only emerge after the chrysalis of tradition, habit, and heredity has been cracked open and burst asunder, allowing to escape into the light of freedom and the nakedness of the unconditioned. Such a transition necessitates destruction of the old forms, both of thought and action. It produces revolutionary and experimental attitudes, which find their first expression in the fine arts, which are always prophetical. We have watched this happen first in the realm of music, then of literature, and then of art and sculpture. James Joyce, Gertrude Stein, Picasso, in their access of rebellion against outworn ways, these pioneers produced works whose efforts have been to break apart and disrupt habitual mental ruts and the attitudes, and to introduce the unexpected. The unnatural, the meaningless, instinctively they prepare the way for something which has to come, something utterly new and different, although they do not yet know what that will be. Nevertheless, several decades of such inspiration has indeed found its mark in the consciousness of the people. It has gatecrashed the apathy of their conditioning and aroused them to more mature need for realization and self-determination. So the new awakening urges have begun to express themselves outwardly, beginning, of course, in physical resistance against the old traditions and authorities. This preliminary stage of destruction of the outworn is painful, even terrifying to the unperceptive. But already there are signs of the second stage, the rebuilding towards new values and along experimental lines, the desire to take responsibility in planning and in action. Much of this has been rehearsed before in history with the rise and fall of many civilizations. But today there are two new differences. Firstly, the revolution is worldwide. Secondly, although all races and classes are taking part, it is led by the youth of all nations. They seem to forego youth's careless rapture and to suffer discomfort, danger, and disruption, and to give service and even thought to the rebuilding and remodeling of social and educational conditions. It is true that rebellion brings with it elements of violence, of despair, and of distortion. It always has. Thus, today's young people, in their determination to enlarge their awareness of hidden potentials, first take to drugs, and later to more constructive and radical practice of meditation. Here, they are faced with much danger. For who is qualified to teach them in ways suitable to this day and age, and comprehensible to the utterly untrained? Is their legitimate aspiration to be betrayed by half-truths, wrong emphasis, vagueness, or even dangerous practices? As a worldwide and age-old practice, meditation has many facets, many systems, and possibly as many distortions as have infiltrated most of our great religions. How are we going to find our way to the underlying truths, if any, and will it be worth our while? For it is claimed that by meditation and through meditation only, spiritual growth and ultimate knowledge, wisdom and achievement are possible, and that this achievement is unimaginably glorious. It therefore seems essential that we should consider, first of all, how much truth there is in the claims made for meditation, what exactly happens or develops in the student, and what is the biological and physical activity which takes place. Further, it will be well to outline the whole practice of balanced living, which is included in this science, the stages of development which ensue, and the phenomenon which lead step by step to the ultimate fulfillment and achievement. After we have made this exploration of the purpose of meditation and its techniques, we will together do an experiment. We will make a demonstration of an actual meditation, a constructive train of thought which will build up into new discoveries without the use of books or any outside help. We will choose a subject about which we are likely to know nothing. Step by step, we will construct our channel to the universal mind, and we will see how much knowledge new to us we can draw down through it. Thus, we will find out what meditation is and how it works within the human being. Which are its techniques most suited to ourselves and to what results we can look forward? Our purpose in this experiment will be to make an approach to an understanding of the divine plan of evolution and progress, if there is one, so that we might intelligently and successfully cooperate with it, thus bringing an entirely new and exciting element into our lives. During the time of this experiment and the writing of this book, we will open no other volume nor use any visible source of information whatsoever. The memory of our former studies coupled with energetic thinking will suffice for us. Individual thinking is rare and a difficult function with most of us. Some of us may feel ill-disposed to follow through with the rather scientific beginnings of our research. Those who skip that portion of the work may arrive at the end saying, "Astonishing, interesting." But one cannot possibly know whether there is any truth in it. Those who enter seriously into the spirit of the experiment will, on the other hand, be likely to discover even more than we may capture in these pages. So, there you go. Yeah, there's the preface, introduction to our new series of reading, The Fifth Dimension, Vera Stanley Alder. And we will continue more into that next week and get into reading that. So I want to start out some of it here for you tonight on this Friday night edition of the show. I want to thank everybody for being with us. TheGlobalReality.com is our website. Please support our work if you can. My name is Josh Reeves. I love each and every one of you, and we'll see you next time. You guys have a great weekend. Take care.